The Education Policy Committee will come to order.
Which, for yours?
No, your 3028.
Is that policy?
Yeah, I thought Leroy's was, is that policy too? So we're going to Leroy's? I can go do that.
Mr. Chairman, is this, are we in policy for this bill?
Members, Senator Olson and members, yes, we left the Finance Division and now we are in the Policy Committee. And we have Senate File 3028, and Commissioner Segrin and Dr. Melcher. This is.
Yes, that needs to go because there's policy things in there.
This is the governor's proposal, and welcome Senator, or Dr. Melcher and Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Dr. Melcher and I are going to kind of play a little tag team here, and Dr. Melcher will start with Article 1, which is our finance section, and explain that to you.
Commissioner, if you could move the microphone right in front of you, then we can.
Yes.
Everybody can hear. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. I'm going to walk you through Article 1 of the bill. Article 1, Section 1 is a recommendation to change the minimum length of the school year from a number of days equal to the days that the school district had in 1997 to a uniform number of hours. So changing from days to hours, and then also making that a uniform system across the state. Currently, we have a minimum that varies among districts depending on how many days they happen to have in 1997, and we have no minimum for charter schools that started after 1997 since they didn't have a minimum on which to base the calculations. We found that some school districts have struggled with this. You may have seen reports in the newspaper about Moundsview recently where they were looking at lengthening the day but then having eliminating some part days, and that kind of technically put them in violation of this because they, even though they were adding to the length of the school year in terms of numbers of hours of instruction, they technically had fewer days than they had previously. So we think it makes a lot more sense to the length of the school year expressed in hours rather than days, and to have a uniform approach throughout the state.
Dr. Melcher, just quickly, do those districts that have moved to a four-day school year or school day school week, does that also cause problems?
Mr. Chairman and members, when they have a four-day school week, they have a longer day, so that does not create a problem. We do have a number of districts across the state that are a little short on the days compared to the numbers we have in here. These are the same numbers that we had in the law in 1993 when the old minimums were repealed. So it's equivalent to a six-hour day for 170 days for a secondary school, 5.5 hours for an elementary, 2.5 at a. But then if they have longer days, then they can have fewer. So the 4 hours work, or 4 days works if you have longer days. We have a number of districts that are a little bit under these minimums. We have a few charter schools that are as low as 700 hours, which I think creates some real serious questions in terms of being 30% short of the number of days that one would expect in a school year. Article 1, Section 2 of the bill is codifying the property tax shift language using the same methodology that was used in 2003, the last time we had a statutorily enacted property tax shift at 48.6% of the levy. On Mr. Nauman's tracking sheets, you'll see that this is showing a $14.6 million savings to the state in fiscal 11, $64 million in 12, and $71 million in 13. It's essentially the same as the governor's unallotment as it related to this, except that the methodology is slightly different, that making it consistent with the method that the legislature has used in the past. It saves the state just a little bit more money, and then there are some ongoing savings because the governor's unallotment related to the tax shift was a one-time occurrence. This would make that an ongoing adjustment until such time as the state budget surplus was created, allowing us to pay it back. Article 1, Section 3 is changing the minimum length of the school year for charter schools to hours rather than days, consistent with Section 1. Section 4 is slightly modifying the extended time revenue formula to specify that if a school district is no longer providing extended time programs, that they don't continue to get extended time revenue. Because we have a two-year averaging of pupil units, if a school district drops that program, they get a little bit of money the year after they quit doing it. It's a $5,000 item in the budget, so there would be just a tiny savings to the state if we did this. This would make it consistent with what we do with LEP programs if a district dropped LEP.
Just to jump back, what happens to those charter schools that are significantly low in hours? Is there a penalty, or what does the department do?
Mr. Chairman, currently there is no penalty. They just get paid the regular rate. So we have a couple charter schools that have 700 hours of instruction instead of 1,020 at the high school. They get the same $5,124 per pupil as anybody else.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, is that because they meet the number of days, but they don't have the length of day? Or they are meeting less days also?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, we just have a couple that are way out on the margin here. There's one charter school that has four-hour days for 165 days a year for their high school. We think that's not enough.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you done any visits of how they do on their standardized tests?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, I think that's a very interesting question. We have not looked at that particular. We just kind of pulled the numbers out of here to look at the individual schools, but I think that's probably something that we should be looking at.
Dr. Melcher, is it because they started after 1997? Or
Mr. Chairman, there are two issues here. If a charter school started after 1997, there's no minimum at all. If the charter school started before 1997, or for any school district, there is no penalty in law if a school district violates the minimum length of the school year. Up until 1993, we did have a penalty where there was a reduction in general education aid for failure to provide the minimum length of a school year. But currently, that penalty is not on the books. The governor is recommending in Section 5 of the bill that be reinstated with the same language that we had back before 1993. Basically says if you don't have the minimum length of the school year, we reduce your general education aid 60% for each day that you're short or for each hour that you're short. So this would kick in. We have not costed this out with any savings to the state because we assume that school districts and charter schools that are short right now will make up the time and they'll actually provide the minimums that are provided in the bill.
I guess I was under the impression that law was still in effect, but it's not.
Mr. Chairman, we have a minimum, but it's not enforced, so there's no law that enables the department to make any sort of penalty against a district that doesn't meet the minimum lengths right now.
Dr. Melcher?
Mr. Chairman, member, Section 6 of the bill is the aid reduction that goes with the property tax shift, and there we're simply cross-reference to the paragraph C that was in Section 2 of the bill. So this is updating the language in the aid reduction that goes with the shift to reflect the new paragraph reinstating the statutory language on the shift. Section 7 of the bill is codifying the aid payment shift. You can see on page 4, line 31 of the bill, that the aid payment percentage is set at 73% consistent with the governor's unallotment provision. That's a $1.2 billion item in 2012. Section 8 is a technical change eliminating obsolete language on the payment schedule relating to 2004. Section 9 is language reinstating the advanced final payment for school districts and statutory operating debt. In the past, when we have done a payment shift, we have exempted the school districts and statutory operating debt so that they could continue to get 90% of their general education aid if they were far enough into statutory operating debt. That was part of the governor's unallotment plan and also part of the proposal here when we codify the payment shift. That's a $4.5 million one-time cost in the bill. Section 10 is eliminating obsolete language relating to aid payment percentages, again, that related to a change that was made in 2005. And then Section 11 is the appropriations. Are reflecting the changes for the 73-27 payment schedule, and I believe these are still based on the November forecast number, would need to be updated at some point to reflect that, and the other changes that I've mentioned here in Article 1.
Mr. Chair, Article 2 is the Education Excellence article. And the first one discusses the EPASS program. That program is the Education Planning and Assessment System. That's what that stands for. And each year, our students in all of our school districts have the opportunity to take an explore and plan test that's connected with the ACT. These two, what I call pre-ACT tests, actually give those students an indication of how well they might do when they take the ACT test, which is the admissions test that many students are required to take before they can get into a post-secondary institution. This has been a highly successful program because it actually gives our school districts the opportunity to help students when they see that they may be off track for not being ready for a post-secondary opportunity or on track, and they can give them some additional encouragement to take even more advanced classes if a student so chooses. We also pay for those tests, both the 8th grade and the 10th, but we have some unexpended monies in the program. And what we would like to do with that unexpended money is to create within our longitudinal data system that is being structured some information that we can start using to track the students that start with the explore, the plan, and then take the ACT to see what the correlation is when students are able to have that information available to them early. So this will help us with some web design, with some data warehouse planning in conjunction with this, and are asking that the unexpended, if we have unexpended money, that this will be able to be used for that. Now, the reason we're carrying a cost is that when there is unexpended, that usually goes back to the general fund, so we have to carry a cost if we're going to recapture that for the next year. Then if you go to sections 2 and 5, these refer to the requirement that a candidate, a teacher candidate, or someone who wants to enter a teacher preparation program must pass a basic skills test. Right now, in the current language, it says that a person has to successfully complete the test, and the way that has been interpreted is that you can fail it, but can enter a preparation program. And so our proposal is that, no, you must pass the test before you can enter a preparation program. We do not allow students that enter a technical program or a community college to begin their general coursework until they are able to pass an ACCUPLACER or a test that shows that they are ready to be able to take their next courses. They have to be remediated, and then they can go ahead and enter their general courses and their plan of what they're going to be studying for their major. When the Board of Teaching was grappling with this, there were a number of teachers on the Board of Teaching that were surprised that a candidate for a preparation program did not have to pass it. And I think that many people don't realize that. This does not say that we don't want those candidates in the program, but they have to be remediated in the areas that they're weak in before they can start, just like any student that's going into a technical program or a community college program. So it's just a change in word to really clarify that they must pass the program or pass the test before they can actually enter.
Commissioner, do we have any idea how many have completed the program but haven't passed the test?
Mr. Chair, yes. I don't have the exact number, but it's around 50 that actually are still operating without the passage of this. What happens with those people is they go through their whole program. Then they are allowed to have a three-year waiver. So for another 3 years, they can continue teaching in a school. And then at the end of that 3 years, if they still have not been able to pass the test, then they are not able to become a teacher. My feeling is that those people should have been told early on that they possibly were not going to be able to make it. We've taken 4 years of their money and maybe not sent the right signal to them. So it's not a large number of people, but we need to send a signal that we value and honor the teaching profession. And so this is just a very minimal requirement that we think is important.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Segrin, do you think that this is prevalent in all schools that have teacher preparation programs? Because when my daughter was going into that program, it was her understanding completely that if she did not pass the test, she would not get into the program at the university where she was attending. And so do some of them have that as their current standard, but some do not?
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, that's an excellent question. Most of our preparation programs, besides the basic skills test, also look at other measures of ability. So they might look at grade point average. They may look at, what the student has taken in their high school classes, et cetera. So it's not just that mere basic skills test that allows you to get in or not out of into a preparation program. So that there is much more of a comprehensive look. So that is why we think this is sort of a kind of a common sense basic clarity to our requirements. There can be, though, some that are admitted and continue through their whole program, and at the end of the time, they cannot. And my concern is that if you are an elementary teacher, or even if you're a teacher that is supposed to be teaching math or English in a high school, if you haven't been able to pass those basic tests, that is going to give you a harder time becoming a competent teacher, especially the elementary if you're weak in an area, because you have to teach, and our standards are getting much more robust. So we need to make sure that the teachers or preparation candidates can at least have those minimal skills before they enter.
Okay, Commissioner?
All right. The next one would be to... Section 3, I'm sorry, on the elementary, thank you, Senator DeForest, right? The elementary math content, as we had worked really robustly on our reading content for the preparation of teachers, we also want to look at our math content preparation and have the Board of Teaching actually examine the preparation for student for elementary, particularly teachers, so that they are fully prepared to teach mathematics. So we'll be working with our higher ed institutions to really beef up our math content preparation as we did with the reading. And you'll notice an appropriation of $10,000 to help us do that. Then in Section 3, we also are proposing to update the principal licensure for principals. Right now, that licensure standards have not been updated for a number of years. We have had really tremendous success with our Principal Academy that is based on the National Institute of School Leaders training. We would like to look at their preparation, and also there's some national standards called ISLIC, and please don't ask me what that acronym stands for, but it is leadership content, and so we're going to ask the Board of Administrators to look at the standards and expectations for principals and update those because we think that that's very important for our 21st century learning skills that we need to be teaching
Senator Salzman.
And just to go back, Mr. Chair, and also Commissioner, on the math, just a question, and I'm just pleased to see that, as I'm sure Senator Olson is one of the groups that might be involved with this, because I know we've done so much with SciMath, mm-hmm. and will there be an opportunity to involve them in this rulemaking process as well, because they have been so helpful in mm-hmm. Providing documentation and research on this issue. So will there be an opportunity so they would be involved with this as well as our higher education institutions?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Senator Salzman, absolutely. The Board of Teaching rulemaking is really a very wide open process, so a lot of people can be engaged in providing input. And so we would certainly, or the Board of Teaching, I shouldn't speak for the Board of Teaching, but I'm assuming that they would certainly involve our partners, SciMath, MIN, because they have been just extraordinary in helping us develop our standards and working. And they are very connected with higher education also. So
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
So Mr. Chairman, to that point, too.
Okay. I just want to just kind of update members on the what we'd like to do is to get through this policy a bill so that we can actually take a vote and send it to the Finance Division. So, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, the wording is interesting here in that you have it's joined with in terms of the language that we have relative to the reading and literacy, and that that test measure their knowledge, skill, and ability in comprehensive scientifically-based reading instruction. But in this part that you have added relative to math, you're just assessing the candidate's knowledge, skill, and ability in mathematics, not necessarily, maybe there isn't the same counterpart, the knowledge and skills in the instructional, any research-based methods of the instruction of mathematics, because I haven't dug into it. I don't know that they've got a 150 years math teaching or as we've had in the reading, but sometimes there's some things that are going on that get in the way of student learning because the teachers haven't been equipped with those methods, and I wondered if a few additional words there might strengthen it so that it isn't that they just know how to perform math functions, but they know how to teach them as well in effective ways that might meet differing students' needs. That would really be very, very similar to what we did with the reading and what the board has done too.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
And Senator Olson, yes, that certainly would be considered a friendly suggestion.
We'll
we could certainly work with the Board of Teaching to incorporate that because certainly from my position as commissioner, I want to put the wow factor into all of our teaching. And to me, the wow factor is engaging students in the instruction of math, reading, science, et cetera,
true.
That really is relevant and engaging to students. So
thank you.
I'd be glad to entertain that.
Commissioner?
All right. The Section 4 is actually just instructing the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators to develop data sharing agreements with the Department of Education so that we can look at the preparation of principals and teachers as they exit the preparation programs and enter the K-12 system to follow the success of those and successful preparation of those students, then feed that back to those preparation programs for improvement when necessary of those programs. So that's basically what Section 4 says. Again, Section 5 is...
Mr. Chair?
Senator Wieger?
Thank you. I know time's short. But, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, might it enhance the Section 4 if you had K changed to E? E-12, because we have early childhood teachers and you know we're for the total system preparation. And
Mr. Chair, that is certainly a good suggestion also.
Why don't we, Senator Wieger moves that where we have on line 1219 and also 1226 and 1229.
1222.
1222. Wherever it says K-12, we would delete the K and insert E. Mm-hmm. On Senator Wieger's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same side.
Thank you.
Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Wieger. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, in the same section on lines 1325 to 1331, can you explain why these are being deleted?
Yes, I was going to just get to that, Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel. The next section refers to, it removes a lot of language that allows teachers to get a waiver for 3 years if they haven't passed the basic skills test. And so we're just saying, no, we're going to have them pass, and we don't need that waiver anymore to teach if they haven't done that. The next, as part of section, five, we also require that anyone that is in a preparation program take at least one online course, and also that some online pedagogy is developed in the preparation programs, because we know that we're going to have more and more online instruction, and it's really important. And I think that this certainly will be a very easy thing to meet. Many of our students now in colleges are taking online courses periodically. But the I think more important thing is to really talk about the development of online courses and the pedagogy that is needed to actually work and teach in that kind of a environment. And so we would like to have the preparation programs think about developing courses in that area. Then also, we want to, when we periodically in the E-12 system change our standards, which is now on about a 7-year cycle, we would then also require our Board of Teaching to also then look at the standards, the preparation standards for teachers, and make sure that the preparation of those teachers are in sync with our new standards, our revised standards as we move forward, so that we're always making sure that our candidates are coming out understanding what is needed to be taught around our K-12 or E-12 standards. Then in section 6, that's
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
You're going to mention about the K-12 there. I think that might be correct to have K-12 there because we don't have standards as such in E in early childhood. But I think what we'll do is give the direction that wherever it should be E, that they would make that change.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering if we were ready in this section. I think the other component was somewhat differently focused.
Correct.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Sorry, I was interrupted here.
Mr. Chair, I saw it as an opportunity, though, that perhaps there should be policy direction that we have standards in early as well. It's a part of that system, and we can discuss it further. But
Senator Bonhoff?
Mr. Chair and Senator Wieger, we are moving towards that with our quality rating and improvement system, but I think it would be premature to put it in statute yet because we haven't yet created it. But we are working with the department to do that.
And Mr. Chairman, that early childhood goes beyond the public system that we regulate too. So,
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Section 6 is just a continuation of Sections 2 and 5, which clarify that instead of saying that a teacher candidate successfully completes, they must pass the basic skills test. Then in Section 7 through 14 is kind of the meat of the governor's proposals this year called the Teacher Evaluation and Tenure Renewal Act. We are looking at strengthening the induction period for new teachers. We want to provide support for all teachers' professional growth, require teacher employment and renewal of that employment at least every 5 years. That's the most controversial piece in the proposal, and recruit, retain, and reward the most highly effective and qualified teachers. So we want an evaluation system that should have meaningful summative which would ensure quality assurance and formative, the professional growth functions. Many of our school districts work with Charlotte Danielson, who is a leader in looking at what the domains, the successful domains of teaching are. And she quotes, or there's a quote, where good teacher evaluation systems merge these two purposes of summative and formative functions so that you can have a strong evaluation system. The proposal will utilize a model for teacher evaluation that requires a cycle of review for teachers beyond the traditional probationary period. The teacher would have at least 3 evaluations every year, with a culminating full formal evaluation at least once every 5 years, and that would determine whether the teacher would go on in the teaching profession or whether they would be terminated. And as I said, that is the most controversial section of the bill. If you remember in our Race to the Top application, what we have done is moved to provide a tiered licensure system. We did not go as far as tenure renewal, but we did create another tier called a master teacher that would be an optional licensure that a teacher could pursue. And we did state in the Race to the Top that we do have continuing licensure now, a 5-year, where you have to accumulate a number of continuing education credits. And we did say that those credits should be highly aligned to the needs of students and the professional development that would support that. So this goes one step further to actually have a renewal process. And as I said, that's probably the most controversial. Section 7, then, as part of the teacher tenure and evaluation reform proposal, establishes a written evaluation by licensed administrators for teachers during the probationary period. We would like to, and this was also part of the Race to the Top, to formalize the evaluation and put a framework in place that every administrator that is judging the probationary period would have, so that there would be a more evenness in the assignment of a probationary teacher to that that first initial licensure.
Commissioner, I think what we'll, and members, I think what we'll try to do is to go through the bill. We will get this again. We'll back in our finance division, but this is kind of the last policy committee meeting that we have before the deadline. So, Senator Therese Ray, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I have several questions, but so maybe we could go through it, like you said.
Sure,
this is our last policy committee. But I would like to ask the question so that we're prepared for the next meeting, because I think there are a few things I would like to do in between.
And Mr. Chair, I do have to leave at 10 to 11, so I'm going to try to go through these really quickly. Section 8 requires that trained observers are created for probationary teachers, and require districts to provide support to teachers throughout their probationary period, an induction system, if you will. Section 9 creates, as part of the teacher tenure evaluation, to establish teacher tenure renewal system requiring renewal of teacher employment. This is what I talked about, every 5 years. With tenure determined based on a portfolio of evidence of their work, a portfolio of evidence of the impact that they have on academic achievement, and other evidence that would be part of this evaluation system. Section 10 also requires districts provide support to teachers to ensure professional growth. So not only are the probationary teachers supported, but all teachers are required to be supported throughout their career with professional growth opportunities. There also will be established written evaluation by licensed administrators for teachers during the probationary period. As I said, we want to have a framework so that any administrator that is evaluating the probationary teacher has a framework that they can use, which would include an educational improvement plan for that teacher, staff development plan for that teacher, and use of objective evaluations throughout that probationary period. Then in Section 12, again, it requires, this is actually a repeat. This is the previous sections were for most all school boards or school districts. This is for the cities of the first class, so we're repeating this twice here, so I apologize for that. In Section 15, we also are requiring that districts report in their consolidated financial statement information, the information on salary, benefit, and retirement costs of teachers and the total package percentages for a contract. And there's an appropriation of $15,000 to get that that information set up. That would be reported on our website for the public. And then we also provide an appropriation for the integration of teacher collective bargaining data, and that's that $15,000. Mr. Melcher has a Section 16. I will talk briefly about Section 17. We need to change the English language learner standards or update them. They haven't been updated for a number of years. And this is actually part of federal direction to create English language learner standards. And so we will be working with varying groups of people with expertise in that area to update our standards. And the rulemaking costs for this will be paid for through our Title III funds, so there is no need for an appropriation there.
Section 16 is simply the appropriation changes, primarily November forecast and moving to the 73-27 payment schedule. And there's the $15,000 for this change in the school district consolidated financial statement and a $2,000 adjustment for the Foundation for Student Organizations for the 3%.
Commissioner and Dr. Melcher, on page 25, we had submitted, both the House and the Senate had submitted information as to the rider language for the urban educators, and I don't believe your language picked that up. Subdivision 14.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner?
I'm trying to find out why that's.
Mr. Chairman, Tom Melcher, Department
Dr.
of Education.
Melcher.
My understanding that's being dealt with in a standalone, separate bill.
Okay.
It was already heard in the committee.
Mr. Nauman.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxok had a bill that we passed out of this division that would do that. I think that just the question was, is there some indication of intent on the part of the governor's office with respect to its omission in this bill?
Mr. Chair, yes, we would support the language and the intent. Absolutely.
In Senator Saxok's bill, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
All right. Dr. Melcher.
Chairman and members, I think much of the rest of the bill here is going through appropriation changes. Article 3, starting on page 27, are the appropriation changes for special education, which are reflecting the November forecast and the 73-27 payment schedule. Page 29, we have a similar language on the facilities and technology appropriation changes. No policy changes here other than the continuation of the 73-27 and the forecast updates. I think the next substantive piece to be looked at here is under Article 7, and Ms. McGlone would be dealing with the appropriation changes there.
Okay, Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, excuse me, Commissioner. I just have a quick question as you walk out. I'm sorry. Excuse me, Dr. Melcher, for interrupting. I just noticed the commissioner was leaving. Commissioner, I noticed that you did not have a section in the bill on alternative licensure, and so I wondered if you wanted to make any comment with regard to the governor or your support for that, not for that.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, we're wholeheartedly supportive of alternative licensure. We have tried for 5 years to have an alternative licensure language, and we would... in the Race to the Top application, we have a modest proposal that would kind of continue what we're doing right now with alternative licensure, and we would be supportive of of that, but we frankly just did not think that the legislature would support us on that, and have appreciated the individual support of legislators, and would continue to love to work with all parties on getting something passed. I think it would very much help our application if we renew.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may say
something before Senator Tresray.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to let the commissioner know that I am very interested in having a conversation about your politically charged article in this bill, because I do believe that many of the concepts that are being proposed are very needed, and it is not helpful to have the governor with one idea and we opposing the idea or vice versa. I think that there is some content in here that is very, very important, and I know we're going to have an opportunity to come back to it. I really believe that you're going to get bipartisan support from people who are really at both ends in a very conservative and liberal positions that will agree to these concepts, and it will be very beneficial to have a conversation between now and the next meeting of the committee. So I just wanted you to know that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 3028 as amended, be recommended to full finance. What we're discussing.
Okay, the motion, Senator Wigger, would be that Senate File, as a Senate File 3028 as amended, would be recommended to be passed and sent to state and local government. We don't send it to.
We'll come back.
They requested it.
We never sent it before. There, why don't we send it to state?
They requested it.
I'll have to talk to Senator Rest.
What did she want?
If you want to dual track it, but.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that in years past we haven't sent the whole bill, but what we have done is sent the rulemaking provisions. There might be a mechanism to do that, but I think that given the deadline that is the sense that we should leave it there and let them deal with it.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Chair, the committee meets all day tomorrow, so maybe you could get it heard.
Okay, Senator Roebling, I guess I was just questioning that. I can't remember having sent rulemaking authority for the Department in Education to state and local. It just doesn't. But is maybe Dr. Melcher or maybe they left? Is there some unusual rulemaking request in here?
Unusual rulemaking request, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I think there was rulemaking request for.
Rulemaking request in
section
2. I'm not the.
Page 7.
Oh, it is the normal. It is the normal rulemaking process. On page 27 of the bill.
27.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Norman.
We'll have to find all the provisions in the bill, but I know that we're tracking about four or five different individual rulemaking provisions on the spreadsheet. One for principal licensure update, teacher entry requirements, K-12 teacher standards alignment, and then elementary math content exam. Some of those are more exhaustive than others.
Mr. Chairman, there's also rules on page 12, line 3. To the Board of School Administrators.
Okay. It has made the first deadline in the House, I believe.
Mr. Chair, the House has heard this bill informational only at this point.
It's in the Finance Committee in the House or in the Ways and Means?
It's in the Policy Committee, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right.
State and local.
State and local. And I'll talk to Senator Rist. Any other questions? This will come back to us in the Finance Division, but we want to be sure that it meets the deadline so that we can deal with it there. Any other comments that members or anyone wants to make? Mr. Nauman wanted to point out that in your packets, there is a spreadsheet that you'll see when it comes back to, you have it in your packets, relating to the budget. And I don't know if there's any comments.
So, Mr. Chairman and members, it's a fairly standard spreadsheet that members have seen before. I'll just highlight the quick column that you probably ought to spend time looking at if you're interested. It's the difference, Governor, minus November. Yes, we do have February forecast numbers, but the governor's numbers at this point are benchmarked to the November forecast, so we included those. That's for fiscal 10 and 11. Those differences show up, the major savings in 10 and 11 being the property tax recognition shift savings, and then there's the governor's rec for 12 and 13 minus November. Those show quite substantially larger savings due to the payment shift adjustments that are included in the governor's bill. And so, Mr. Chairman, also with your indulgence, I'll make reference to an earlier conversation that we had where I incorrectly spoke about a Senate rule that said that it was not possible to have a recorded vote in division. It certainly is. The issue is that it can't be recorded and reported in the Senate Journal. So it's a question of reporting, not a question of process.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mount. Okay. We'll just hold Senator Wieger's motion. We do have an amendment, and this is from the department, the A1 amendment.
So moved.
Mr. Nauman.
So, Mr. Chairman and members, this is the buyback language in 16A that we spoke about both with Senator Boxbill and as well as some of the conversation that Dr. Melcher went through. This is a merely technical adjustment. It strikes some old reference to session law that's no longer effective and updates the paragraph so that it points to the correct paragraph due to the changes in the governor's bill. They felt it's necessary to change it from paragraph B to paragraph C so that it points to the correct paragraph.
Okay.
It's largely technical.
And
there's also some update of some appropriation language, Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator Hand moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Ms. Hermanson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll be very brief. I just want on the record, as you're processing this, and I know you're trying to meet deadline, we have some very strong concerns about the 10-year changes in this bill, and we look forward to working with the committee on discussing this in more detail and working on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harrison. Right. On Senator Wieger's motion to pass Senate File 3028 as amended and re-refer it to the Committee on State and Local Government. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, members. Senator Trezre.
Mr. Chairman, before we go, I would like to ask the question as to whether or not the Senate will be having a conversation about this particular article, that it is very important that all of us talk about with respect to teacher training, tenure, all of the issues around teacher training. We're having meetings with the communities ongoing in every district to talk about the elephant in the room. And then then we don't dare to really dive into it. There are concerns in the community about the language that is here. There's a lot of support for some of the language that is here. Are we going to have a conversation in this committee with all the members to figure out what can we do now? What is good? What is not good? What are we ready to do this year? The next. How do we consult with teachers, with principals? How do we bring the concerns that the communities and parents have about this issue and then begin to have a bipartisan support on an issue that is very, very critical today? Are we going to do that?
The answer is yes, we will. The reason we didn't have additional time to do that today is basically, you know, to meet a deadline for, you know, the bill to be processed. And then it will come back from state and local government to the committee, the finance committee, and then it'll be in our division, our finance division, where we can have the discussion. So it, we wanted to be sure that we met that deadline so we would be able to have that discussion that you're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a housekeeping question. There's a number of papers that you were in our folders today we didn't get to. Should we put them back in our folders so you don't have to waste more paper?
The answer is yes. We didn't get to all of the bills that we had on our agenda, so we'll use those. So thank you. All right, committee is adjourned.
Thank you.